Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for BleacherReport.com, SportsOnEarth.com, Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and TheSportsDaily.com. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's going on?
And it's week four.
It is.
It's the 2015 season. We're about to head to the quarter turn.
Yeah, we're about to get out of the first month, too.
Yes, dreaded September, the time where you can't figure anything out about any team, except when you can. I think after these first three games, I think there are conclusions we can start drawing about certain teams. For example, going to be a long, tough season for the San Francisco 49ers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Chicago Bears. These teams are just stuck in ruts that are going to be difficult to get out of. Struggles on offense and defense for all of those teams.
And it looks like they have some major deficiencies that it's going to be really hard to overcome throughout the season.
Especially when things only get more difficult when you talk about guys are playing hurt, guys fall injured.
Right.
So it's going to be an uphill climb for a lot of these teams. I'll tell you one thing that really stuck out to me, though, in week three is that the Dallas Cowboys, granted they lost to the Atlanta Falcons 39-28, that the Dallas Cowboys could at least put up 28 points without having Tony Romo or Dez Bryant out there. I mean, that's good. I mean, 28 points in any given week is good enough to win almost any game.
Well, that was definitely a bittersweet game for Cowboys. The Cowboys team as well as their fan base, just for the fact, like what you said, I don't think people expected a whole lot out of a Brandon Whedon-led office, or they were just really nervous about it. And
sure,
it looked really competent at first, and then the wheels kind of came off. And I think so. You know, as much as they can take that away from the game, they also have to look at the fact that not only did they end up losing the game after having such a commanding lead, but then they still kind of got their doors blown off even at the end. You know what I mean?
It was sure.
It ended
oh
not
yeah.
Not even being a 10-point game. So yeah, that's a really
it's
weird.
It's cold comfort. We'll
yeah,
say.
Yeah, it
cold
was a,
comfort.
It was a real weird situation, or real weird game from that respect. That you know, it was kind of like a tale of two halves there. So I'm taking away that you know, we finally got to see Indianapolis, you know, get back into their comfort zone. Which
yeah,
and
at first it didn't look like that was going to happen. Everybody was kind of just declaring Andrew Luck over. Everything is over, because it wasn't very good the first part of that game for them. But they ended up coming back and winning 35-33. So they get that win. That's a good start. I mean, the Colts are no longer winless.
And as we'll talk about later, they got another matchup coming within the division this week. So, you know,
this is a hole they can dig themselves out of.
I can't remember the number, if it was 13, 14. I think it was 14 straight division wins for them, because it goes back a couple years.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, that's the Colts' stomping ground is their own division. And, you know, now they get back into it and they get their first win. They get another one coming up this week. And this one's at home, so it potentially we'll see, you know, them turning the ship around, if you will.
Another thing that caught my eye: the Oakland Raiders. They're 2-1, and they look legitimate. I mean, their defense is playing really well. I'm very impressed with Derek Carr. You know, I've been kind of high on Derek Carr since you know, the latter half of last season, when you can really see that arm and what it's capable of doing. And now that you've got Amari Cooper there to work with him and give him a really incredible weapon, an incredible route runner, great hands. I'm coming away thinking, you know, you've got these teams that are typically, you know, as of late, you know, the Cleveland Browns, the Oakland Raiders, the Jacksonville Jaguars, teams that have been trying to find quarterbacks, trying to find a way to win. And it looks like for right now, the Raiders are on a really good path.
Yeah, it's funny because
they've got a good run game too.
Yeah, it's funny just because that, you know, everything that happened in their off season, it had I'm sure their fans were excited. It had me intrigued and thinking that they were going to be able to, you know, make some sort of step. And it was like, well, let's see, you know, what that step's going to look like. And then, you know, then the first week happened. But this is, you know, serves as a reminder that week one is only week one, because they turn around and the following 2 weeks put two good wins together.
Right.
All three of their games have come against the AFC North, which is I don't know that it's as we'll have to see how good that division is by the end of the year. It's been historically, you know, one of the best in the AFC, and so historically those were three tough games, if you will. It's also interesting though, because the first week they were lifeless against the Bengals, and then
the Bengals are very good. I mean, Bengals are undefeated.
The Bengals are just good, you know. And it's early in the season for the Bengals, and that's when they play their best ball, you know, as we've seen over the last couple of years.
Sure.
But they, you know, they came out blazing, and Oakland just wasn't ready, or they there was a fifth preseason game for them or something. I don't know what it was, and they played way better in the second game, but that again, that was against a Baltimore Ravens team that looked lifeless out there. They looked
yet
like
again.
They were looking, yeah, absolutely, and we'll talk about that some more,
yes.
I'm sure. But yeah, they just looked like a shell of the team that they've come to be known as. And credit to the Raiders for playing well and making them look that way to an extent. You know, it was like, well, what are we looking at here? And then, but that was it was an impressive win last week, just for the fact that they kind of came and owned from the beginning, and it was an on the road in East Time Zone, early game East Time Zone situation, which I know that's not something that's always gone well for them. So
right,
I'd say that they're kind of to where I had expectations coming into the season after 3 weeks, which is I think they've made a step. How good they're going to be, I think, is still kind of hard to determine. I mean, obviously, we're only 3 weeks in. There's a lot of games left to play, but I could see them ending up kind of in that middle pack, which is a step.
That's an improvement over.
Absolutely.
We're talking a Raiders team that routinely wins maybe 3, 4, or 5 games
over the past decade.
And having them be an 8-8 or even 9-7 team this year is a huge step forward for them.
Absolutely,
it's not like they're in an easy division at all. You know, you're dealing with Peyton Manning, you're dealing with Philip Rivers, you know, you're dealing with the Chiefs. So if they would come away with a record like that, I mean, that's a huge gain for them, and it's a sign that they've really taken that step in that right direction.
Absolutely. Well, they just have to see if they can keep it up week after week here.
So how about those Miami Dolphins? Everybody kind of had them as their darling kind of sleeper Super Bowl team, potential threat to the New England Patriots' dominance in the AFC East. And they're 1-2 right now and took a beating at home in their home opener against the Buffalo Bills, 41-14. Things are amiss in Miami. I mean, the front seven with Ndamukong Suh is not really doing what they had anticipated. The offense, the run game doesn't really exist. Not a lot of support going on there for Ryan Tannehill with the offensive line issues. Yet again, you know, you've got a couple of injured guys, a couple of guys being very outmatched, especially when you're talking about Buffalo's front seven. You know, I'm looking at Miami right now. I'm looking at the situation that they're in, and I feel like Joe Philbin, their head coach, is one of those mid-season firing candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it could happen, especially with, you know, the amount of moves and the amount of money they spent in the offseason. I can see how the pressure would be really on him to get this turned around quickly, or, like you said, potentially it could be a mid-season thing. You know, I've always been one to preach patience in these situations, just because, you know, you look at the body of work that Philbin's put together over there, and it's not spectacular, but it also hasn't been, abysmal either. You know what I mean? They have made some progress under him, but maybe that was in spite of him. I don't know. And I'm not in the middle of that situation. It's really hard to tell from the outside. So, but yeah, they look like they have issues, and some of it seems to be chemistry issues. Some of it seems to be just disorganization issues. It could be a situation where, you know, they bring in a guy like Ndamukong Suh and just expect him to, you know, lead them to the defensive promised land or something like that. And maybe even some of the other guys are relaxing a little bit, expecting him to pick up some of the slack. Again, I'm just throwing out ideas here. I don't know. But
it's not going as planned, for sure.
And they looked out of sorts on Sunday, and the Bills gave them what for. So it was a really good win for the Bills. It kind of shows that Miami needs to get some things turned around if they're going to be anywhere near what people expected them to be coming into the season.
Switching gears here a little bit. You know, we talk about this every week. It's an unfortunate byproduct of the game of football, and that's injuries. We got some injury updates to discuss. The big one we'll start with, of course, is Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger suffering a sprained MCL and a very severe bone bruise in his team's 12-6 win over the St. Louis Rams on Sunday. He's expected to miss about 4 to 6 weeks. Really has more to do not with the stability of the MCL, which has a very clear path towards healing and healing process, but it's really the severe bone bruise, which Ben Roethlisberger says it's the worst bone bruise he's ever had. It's the most pain that he has ever been in. He's hyperextended that same knee before and never had this kind of issue. He's had high ankle sprains. We all know the litany of injuries that Ben Roethlisberger has dealt with over the course of his career. So basically it's about the pain in the knee after the MCL finally heals. So it could be on that higher end of 6 weeks, could be closer to 4 just because Ben has come back from previous injuries more quickly. But again, nothing this painful. With that in mind, though, that means that Michael Vick, for the foreseeable future, will be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers beginning this Thursday night against the rival Baltimore Ravens, who, as we'll discuss a little bit here in a bit, don't have a win yet. You know, we're talking about 3.5 days of preparation for Michael Vick, who, by the way, wasn't signed by the Steelers until August 25th. So he's basically been with his team a month, has 3.5 days to prepare to be a starter. And you have a Steelers offense that has to all of a sudden accommodate a left-handed quarterback.
Yeah,
it's a lot. It's a tall order. It's a lot to ask.
It's a lot, especially for a short week like this. And I mean, even just Sunday to Sunday would be not a lot of time. Going from Sunday to Thursday is just really makes this tough for the Steelers to deal with.
Yep.
Especially for an offense that
very productive, very efficient with Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and he's, you know, obviously the driver of that car. I mean, he makes that offense hum. And, you know, what's it going to look like with Vic? And
you know, what is Antonio Brown still going to be this big threat? Because part of you know, Antonio Brown's amazing and he's an amazing receiver, but a major part of that is that he has Roethlisberger's trust and he trusts Roethlisberger and they work together as a team. So, you know, how is he going to be able to establish even something slightly similar to that with Vic? And you can't expect that to be happening in such a short period of time as this Thursday night. You know that the Ravens are going to be keyed in on stopping Le'Veon Bell from running the ball, because they're going to, you know, if the Steelers can run the ball, they're going to do it this week, but it's going to be difficult. You know, it's a tough situation, and it's not a lot of easy games coming up for the Steelers as well. And you know, at the same time, while their front seven's getting better, their secondary is still a mess. So when you put all this together, I mean, we've talked so much at length, and I've written, you know, just for my work, you know, so much at length of look at the Steelers' defense, especially the secondary. They really have to be carried by the offense yet again this year, and now the big heavy lifter there, Roethlisberger, is going to be out for another, you know, month and a half.
I don't, I my personal thoughts on this, and again, this is just kind of my gut on it, I guess.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to be in too much trouble from this.
Depends on Michael Vick staying healthy, though, too. I mean, he's got an injury history of his own.
That's a very valid point, and especially for a guy that...
Because then it's a Landry Jones show, and we all know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, well, we don't want to even think about that. So
no.
But especially with a guy like Vick, who is relatively new to this offense, probably doesn't have 100% command of 100% of the offense.
No way. Not even close.
Right.
He has like 20% command of 15% of the offense,
right,
probably.
So whatever that number is, you know, because he doesn't know everything so well, and he's also has his habits of, you know, that he's developed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he gets into a situation where he's uncomfortable, he's going to be scrambling around and, you know, potentially could suffer some extra hits from that. But regardless, I think there's enough talent on the offense that they're obviously not going to look like this attack that they were with Ben or that they are when Ben is in there.
Mm-hmm.
One, they have Le'Veon, who is easily one of the top few backs in the league right now. Antonio Brown is arguably the best receiver. If not, he's one of the top couple receivers out there. I think Vic can figure out a ways to get them the ball.
Let them create after the catch, which is what they do.
Let them do their things, exactly. Plus, they get Martavis Bryant back, which should help at least.
Not this week.
Not this week, week five. But so he'll be coming back after this next game. That'll just add another weapon for Vic to use. And again, this is all assuming he can stay healthy. I think they could easily go 500. I think in this stretch, even with some tough games, I think they'll be able to scrap out some wins. And if they can stem the tide and let's say go 500 over the next month to five six weeks or whatever it's going to be before Ben gets back, then I think they're in position at that point, because then Ben's coming back rested with a month and a half to go in the season, let's say, and he'll have all of his weapons, which he hasn't had yet, and we saw how much they were humming even before they got Le'Veon back. He was only in there for a little bit with Le'Veon. They'll have Martavis Bryant back at that point once he's back, so I think that they could be really poised to make that late season run and potentially even get in the playoffs and even go far in there. It's hard to say.
But we've got the 3-0 Bengals to contend with here in the AFC North, right? So if the Bengals are still undefeated or maybe only have one loss by the time Roethlisberger comes back for the Steelers, I mean, they're going to be behind the eight ball.
True. I think the Bengals are playing really well right now. I think they're one of the more talented teams in the league. But I'm still, I've said this to you before, I'm waiting for the night game. I want to see them play at night.
And because win. And Dalton not even play well. And
you know what? Even win or lose, I want to see the Bengals play well, especially Dalton, play well in that situation.
Yeah.
Because regardless of the outcome of the game, if he doesn't look like a deer in headlights like he has, then I'll have a little bit more confidence that they can go to the playoffs and win a big game there. So, granted, they are playing very well right now, and I wouldn't want to play them on any of these weeks, but unless it was at night, then we'd see, you know.
But you have to admit, I mean, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard
easy.
For the Steelers.
It's definitely gonna not going to be easy, especially like you said, the issues they've had on defense, which we've seen. But I have a feeling that they can hold it together enough that when he gets back, they can really put it all together and make that final run.
More injury updates. Let's continue on with some quarterbacks here first. Drew Brees, New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, of course, who missed last week. He's got a shoulder issue bothering him, and so Luke McCown was in at quarterback. He has been throwing this week, and he feels pretty optimistic that he'll be able to play on Sunday, which is good, simply because even with the Saints not having a win right now, you'd rather have a situation where you can have Drew Brees out there instead of Luke McCown, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's good news for now. Another right shoulder situation, this time with Andrew Luck. It's being downplayed as not a big deal, but something, of course, to keep an eye on, considering right now, Indianapolis is the Andrew Luck show. Jay Cutler, Chicago Bears quarterback Jay Cutler, has been limited in practice this week. He's been missing with a hamstring injury for a while now, for a couple of weeks. I would call him doubtful still to play this week. It's a pretty significant hamstring injury that he suffered in week one. But it is good to know that he's moving around a little bit more and one step closer to getting back on the field for the Bears. Alshon Jeffrey, also with a hamstring injury, also limited this week. So we'll have to keep an eye on him as well, see if maybe he can get back on Sunday, or if not, then perhaps soon. Non-quarterback news, Arian Foster, Houston Texans running back Arian Foster, who has been sidelined after undergoing offseason groin surgery, is a game time decision for this week. So even if he doesn't end up playing, again, he is very close to returning for the Texans, which is good news for them. I mean,
that could
really help them out. I mean, they've been able to run the ball a little bit here and there and all that without him, but you're talking about Arian Foster. You want to have him out there. The question is, groins, hamstrings, all of these things that have bugged him over the years, is he going to be on a pitch count once that happens? How limited is he going to be? And how healthy can he stay once he finally comes back? Because that is now the question about Arian Foster is he healthy? How healthy can he stay healthy?
Right.
Victor Cruz, meanwhile, who has not played since October of last year when he tore his patellar tendon, has also been dealing with a nagging calf injury that has been bumming out the New York Giants considerably. And he practiced today, but then tweaked that same calf again. So looks like he took a setback. So who knows when Eli Manning is going to have that favored weapon of his back on the field. And they need him.
Yeah, they.
It can't all just be guys, Reuben Randall and Odell Beckham Jr.
Speaking of guys who could be used by their team.
Victor Cruz, absolutely. And it's going to be a question of how much rust he's got on him. Considering, you know, we're heading into a year of him not doing anything, being inactive. I mean, not being inactive as in sitting on his couch, but, you know, clearly not doing a full workload.
Yeah.
After coming back from such
a... It's not like his muscles are in atrophy or anything.
No, he's not atrophy. It's not like he's been in traction for the past 12 months. But, you know,
yeah.
There's got to be some level of rust.
Sure,
there.
Sure.
So those are the major injuries and injury updates around the NFL. We did a little bit of this last week where we talked about the teams that are 3-0 or at that point 2-0 and the teams that are 0-2. I just want to revisit some of these teams that haven't won games yet because we are down from 9 winless teams to just 4.
And I think that some of them still this week, some are more surprising than others.
Baltimore. I'm very surprised at the Baltimore Ravens, especially because they had that home opener against the Bengals last week. You know, you figured they would be up for that game, and they did. They did mount a late game comeback and ended up only losing by 4 points. You know, so they looked a little bit more competent and a little bit more comfortable than they have in the previous two games. But you know, Baltimore being 0-3, that's something that's never happened in franchise history. We're, you know, one more loss. If they do fall to the Steelers on Thursday night, that's it. They're not going to the playoffs. It's not going to happen because 0-4 teams never do.
Yeah, I mean, I hate using that, you know, it's never happened before, so it won't happen, you know. But
the likelihood is...
The likelihood is very low.
Very low.
And it's so tough to, you know, dig such a deep hole for yourself and then have to, try and climb out of that over the rest of the season. It's been a weird season for them so far. That first game was in Denver, and it was a really tough played game. I think they were hyped up for that, and then Terrell Suggs got hurt, and they still fought in that game and lost a close one. And I think that kind of sat with them, and then they're going to play Oakland on the road after Oakland gets smoked by the Bengals, and they were just kind of, you know, like as we mentioned earlier, they were kind of listless out there, and they just couldn't get into it. And I think part of it was, you know, the opponent. Part of it was losing Suggs the week before, and they just, you know, didn't have it together.
Aimless, leaderless.
Exactly. Then they have their first home game, and of course it's against the team, you know, one of probably two or three teams that are playing the best right now. And the other ones I'm thinking are New England and Arizona probably.
Green Bay,
but in Green Bay, but Cincinnati is definitely one of those teams playing about as well as they can play with a lot of talent on that team, and so the Ravens finally get their first home game, and it's against that team, and again they looked.
AJ Green had a career day against the
he just always
Baltimore.
Plays well there for some reason.
No, he crushes them. It's insane, and now he had 227 yards of career best.
Right.
But he tears them up and he tears the Steelers up in ways that, like, he does not tear the Browns up. It's insane.
Absolutely. The main point I was trying to make is that just as far as how they're playing the Ravens, and I think they started off kind of still in that funk that they were in Oakland, and then Jimmy Smith got that interception, and I think that kind of fired up the team.
Yeah, of course.
And they started playing a lot better, and they got back in the game. But then they lost, and that was largely due to
AJ Green's
being
two late
ridiculous.
Scores and going
exactly.
crazy.
So how is that going to affect them going forward? Are they going to be able to dig out of this? They have a short week.
They have to go to
they
Pittsburgh.
They have to go to a rival Pittsburgh. But again, now, you know, Pittsburgh's without Ben. What's that going to mean? This is a really weird game on Thursday, but we'll talk about that after
we'll make
a while.
Our minute picks. Detroit Lions, another 0-3 team. They fell 24-12 to the Denver Broncos on Sunday night.
I think this is surprising for a lot of people, just because.
But the way that they've gone 0-3 is in pure Lions fashion.
That's the thing for Lions fans that
or
you know
you've just been paying attention to the Lions
that
for a while.
Aren't super Kool-Aid drinkers. You know what I mean? the people that, you know, just have watched the Lions and kind of understand how the Lions are for a long time, you know, it was, this has been a lot of the same old Lions. And, you know, you see that they have, you know, talented guys, they have a lot of potential, but they get in their own way a lot. And this isn't terribly surprising to me that they're 0-3 right now. And it was mainly because as soon as I heard the schedule back
in
April,
terrifying schedule.
It was just like, it was like, oh my God, on the road against San Diego, on the road against Minnesota, who, you know, I think everybody agreed was the most improved team in that division.
Without a doubt.
And probably one of the most improved teams in the conference, if not the league. So, you know, those two tough road games to start, and then they come home and play Denver. And, oh, by the way, then you're going out to Seattle next week, and then you go back home and play Arizona. I mean, it's just a brutal, brutal schedule for the first 5 weeks of the season. And, you know, as a fan of the team, I was kind of hoping that they would be able to put together a win here, a win there, and not be, you know, too much in too much of a hole. And also that if they came out with a pretty decent record, that they could really do something with the season, because their schedule should get easier as the season goes on. And I know that the second half they have a lot of home games. So there's still potential that they could turn this around. But the problem with that team right now is they look too much like the Lions. Meaning, they just know how to trip over themselves and make mistakes and just really come up with key terrible plays at the key terrible times. And, you know, meh, it is what it is, I guess.
The Chicago Bears, I am not surprised that they are 0-3. Maybe if we were talking about 0-2, maybe I was a little bit surprised. I'm not surprised that they're 0-3, though, because they had to go to Seattle, who were 0-2 at that time, to face this team that needed some retribution immediately, and they got it. I mean, the Bears lost 26-0, so I can't say that I'm terribly surprised about that. And you're also talking about this as the Jimmy Clausen show for the moment, while we're waiting for Jay Cutler to heal. No Alshon Jeffrey out there. You know, Matt Forte, he's good, but he can't do it all. And the defense, you know, Pernell McPhee, fabulous player, great pass rusher, great addition to that team, especially as they make that transition to 3-4. But they got a lot of stuff to work on in order to make that defense come together, be where it needs to be. And then you have these deficiencies on offense at pretty much every position, you know, whether it's due to talent or due to injury. So I can't really say right now I am surprised that the Bears do not have a win.
I'd say the Bears are the least surprising 0-3 team at this point. And, you know, if you're surprised by it, you've probably been asleep for 2 years, because,
right,
you know, they've just kind of been on this tailspin, and then they've, you know, cleaned house last year, and they've got a new coach. I thought they made decent coaching hires.
I think the coaching hires.
I'm not a huge fan of John Fox,
but I think they'll pay off in the long term. A long term.
I liked the coordinator hires that they made, but there's also just a lot changing there, and they had issues coming in. You know, I don't think anything has been much of a surprise on where the issues are continuing to show themselves. So, yeah, that's definitely not a surprising situation for them to be 0-3 right now. And like you said, that was probably the least surprising game last week, just because, you know, there was no reason to think that Chicago was going to do anything in that game, and they proved that they couldn't do anything in that game.
except
punt 10 times.
And they're already making roster moves. You know, they're trading John Bostic to the Patriots. They traded Jared Allen to the Carolina Panthers, and they're just taking all of they're looking at some of these veterans and some of these guys brought on by the previous administration and are already giving them the boot.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's some chatter that Alshon Jeffrey and Matt Forte, I mean, for the right price, the Bears will listen.
This is definitely surprising to me. I mean, there's, I believe a month ago or so, several weeks at least, until you get to the, you know, trade deadline, which is usually not a very, you know, big thing in
the
NFL.
Not a very active time for,
yeah,
you know, this it's not hot stove.
Right, and there's other teams making trades and moves. I think the Patriots traded Heumann Alanui today to the Saints. Regardless, you know, it's not necessarily the rarest thing in the world that they've made a trade. It's just that they started trading some of these guys, and there's these hints that they're talking about or potentially looking at trading Alshon and Forte. I think Forte makes a little bit more sense, because there's not a good chance they're going to re-sign him at the end of the year.
Right, and there's not a huge market for Alshon right now just because of the hamstring, I would say.
But, yeah, the fact that they've already traded two guys and are potentially looking to trade, you know, one of their best guys on defense already, and they're potentially looking to trade two of their best offensive players, it really kind of seems like they're giving up on the season. And that's, you know, that seems odd to me, especially if, I mean, I get it. You got a new coaching staff. There's a relatively new GM that is still trying to get all his players
in place. Right, you want to have your guys and not the other guys.
I understand all that, but, like, it's, you know, you're three games in, and that's not a good message to send to your fans who, again, the fans are all, from what I've seen, there's not a lot of optimism going around Chicago anymore. For this season, certainly. And
yeah, luckily things are going well for the Chicago Cubs for the first time in a long time, right?
Yeah, we'll have to see if that's enough to satisfy the Bears fans, but probably not. But yeah, it really seems odd that this early into the season they would make wholesale changes like this, you know, sending off some of their more talented guys, and it's just basically saying, all right, well, let's scrap it and get as many picks as we can and really start looking towards next year. You know, it's not October until probably when most of the people are listening to this podcast. It's as of the recording of this podcast, it's not October yet, and all of these things are going down with the Bears. It just seems somewhat early for that. So that's
right.
That's more surprising than how bad they are.
And it's
right
sort
now.
Of like, and getting rid of Jared Allen, you know, Jared Allen, maybe, you know, he comes from a 4-3 background. This is a 3-4 team, but he is a pass rusher. But they're kind of just doing a favor to Carolina here by trading him for such a low draft pick. You know, Carolina put defensive end Charles Johnson on the IR recall list. He's not going to be able to come back until November 26th at the earliest. But it's like, why? Like, I get why they want to trade for him and all of that. It's just weird. It's weird decisions involving removing some defensive players now. I don't get, like, the who and the why and the timing.
Yeah, I don't know his contract situation. Potentially Jared Allen was going to be a free agent at the end of the season. I mean, he's an older dude, and I'm assuming they didn't sign him to too long a contract. So potentially that's that. Bostic makes more sense just because they weren't using him, and it doesn't seem like he was fitting into what they're trying to do now schematically. And so, you know, might as well try and get something for him. Although, you know, in retrospect, it just looks terrible because it's, you know, a second round player from just a couple years ago.
Who they paid some good money to. Mm-hmm. So and you're talking about, you know, and then you're talking about Bostic, who's a second round pick. And you're getting rid of these guys who, one guy is very expensive, one guy was an early pick, and you're getting rid of them for like sixth and seventh rounders, you know? And sometimes you got to do that. I mean, we saw the Cleveland Browns do that a couple weeks ago with Terrence West, you know, going from a former, third round pick, to a conditional seventh, essentially.
But that was a slightly different situation because from what I understood, that was a locker room chemistry situation.
That was a locker room chemistry situation. It's not like I heard negative locker room things about Jared Allen or John Bostic.
Right. I mean, the West thing was an addition by subtraction situation where you're making your team better by just taking this one guy out that's kind of, you know, and again, who knows how true all that was or whether or not it's fixed anything, but at least in the perception of the people in charge, you know, he was holding things back, so they got rid of him. I get that, you know. Bostic, again, he was a second-round pick, but it was a former regime, and like I said, he schematically wasn't
But when you choose to clear
or
out,
more than schematic,
but when you choose to clear out former regime guys who don't fit in the scheme, isn't this something that the Bears and these
that?
Guys would have known?
Yeah, why didn't they do that in March?
And why didn't they do it in March? Why didn't they do it in July? Why did they do it in August? Why didn't they do it on September 5th on cutdown day?
These are all very valid questions.
If you're trading these guys away, you're not using them, you don't really like them, and they don't fit what you do, and they come from a previous regime.
Why does it take to the
why
end of
does
September
it take until September
out?
29th, September 30th, or whatever to pull that trigger? Like, you couldn't have found a trade partner before. You couldn't have released them. You know, it's weird. I don't know why they're going about doing this thing that you either do later or earlier and doing it now. But
yeah,
that's the Bears. And, I mean,
that's the question for the GM.
But also teams, you know, in a rebuild like the Browns or the Bears are, that are 0-3, they're going to do weird things. They're going to do strange things.
Yeah. I don't know. They seem out of sorts right now. And, you know,
I'm not surprised.
Well, if they are mailing it in at this point, they're folding up shop and saying, we're going to just, you know, try and not get anybody too hurt and just lose a bunch of games for the rest of the season. One, I think that's a terrible way to go about any season, even if you're trying to rebuild stuff.
Yeah, have fun in that locker room. Have fun with that morale, guys.
What I'm saying is you got to show your fan base and your team that you're not completely packing it in, you know, especially when, you know, the one guy from Matt Miller notwithstanding, there isn't like any clear-cut, you know, suck-for-luck situation going on where, you know, your savior is in the next draft or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, even those I don't buy.
No, I don't buy that at all.
I don't buy
ever.
Those, you know, teams are tanking situations.
No, no one wants to intentionally
but
lose.
This certainly
no one wants to lose.
Yeah, and I think at the player level that's the case. But, like, this certainly seems like the front office kind of, you know, folding things up and trying to look towards the 16, you know, before they look towards the next, you know, 13 games here. Weird.
All right, we are going to take a break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we will be back with our week 4 minute picks. So stay tuned. Back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it is time, of course, for Minute Picks. Minute Picks for week 4. This is the first week where teams actually are on bye. This week we have two teams with bye weeks. That would be the Tennessee Titans and the New England Patriots, which means we have 15 games this week instead of 16.
Yes.
Let us begin on Thursday night with the Baltimore Ravens at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Ravens searching for their first win. Will they find it in Pittsburgh against a Ben Roethlisberger-less Steelers team? Part of me says yes, and part of me says no. Part of me says yes because, you know, you can't look a gift horse like this in the mouth. Baltimore desperately needs a win. If they can get it in Pittsburgh on a nationally televised game, you know, Ben's not out there. This is a great opportunity for them to have that, you know, get that chance. Michael Vick doesn't know the Steelers' offense. It's a great opportunity. But the Steelers still have a lot of weapons. You know, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, even Darius Hayward-Bey has stepped up in the early part of this season.
And they're at home.
And the Steelers' front seven has been getting a lot better. The secondary is still quite suspect. I do think that Baltimore is set up here for a win in ways they haven't been in the past 3 weeks. I'm going to go with the Ravens.
Yeah, this man, this is.
Can they take advantage of the opportunity?
Yeah,
that's
what I'm saying. Is that this certainly, you know, this looked super daunting. You know, the third road game in 4. You know, to start the season for them, and it was in Pittsburgh, and you know the offenses they were playing. It was going to be hard enough to begin with, but you know, now that you know Ben's not there, and there's so much for Vic to try and get going. Or to get straightened out before he's going to be, you know, running competently and running the offense competently and all that. So I think it's probably just too much for they're going to be a little out of sorts, and Baltimore knows it. And I think that they're going to try and take advantage on Thursday.
And for how bad Baltimore has looked the first 3 weeks, they get up for this game and they're ready. And they know this team and this is the big'un, you know. So
that's the thing too. Is I really feel like the Ravens have been mentally holding themselves back more than anything. I don't think it's so much of a talent issue on the field as much as just collectively the team just needs to, you know,
snap out of it,
flip that switch and play better. And I think that this could be an opportunity for that.
Talking early games on Sunday, and by early, we mean early. 8:30 a.m. Central Time.
Yes, breakfast and football.
Breakfast in London. New York Jets at Miami Dolphins. Miami being the home team in this game. We talked about the Dolphins earlier, just how it's not really coming together like everybody thought it would this year. New York Jets, conversely, looking pretty sharp. Doing all right on offense, doing quite well on defense. You know, they fell last week to the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles get their first win. But I think that New York can go to London. The Jets can go to London and beat up this Miami team. If the Bills, with a similarly styled defense, can go to Miami and stomp them in the Dolphins' backyard, I think the Jets can go to London and get it done in against the Dolphins there.
I certainly think they should, based on what we've seen thus far through the season. I don't know if I'm quite ready to write Miami off yet in this game, and it's mainly due to, again, I think this is another situation where they have a lot of guys. They have the ability, they should have the ability to get it going.
Yeah, I don't trust that O line though against the Jets.
Yeah, and
defensive
I think that
front.
They lost their center last week too. I think. I don't know if that's for this coming week or not. But my main thing, I'm gonna pick Miami here, and it's mainly because everybody's been talking about how bad they are right now and how it's disappointing. And
weird
all
things
this.
Happen in London anyway.
Weird things happen in London, so who knows? But and I could be completely wrong in this. I definitely could see the Jets winning this because they have, you know, we've seen them play pretty well this year and play, you know, a little bit better than people expected, and they're doing okay. But I kind of feel like this is one of those situations where everybody's talking about the Dolphins all week, so the Dolphins come back and prove everybody wrong. So that's my strange rationale.
Next, traditional early start games on Sunday. Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Indianapolis Colts. I think that the Colts can get that second straight divisional win, set themselves up in a good situation here. They, like we said earlier, all they do is beat their divisional rivals, and that's really helped carry them pretty far over the past couple of seasons. As we've said, there are things to like about the Jaguars, and I don't think they're taking that step forward as rapidly as, let's say, the Oakland Raiders are. But I think that there's a lot of talent there. But I think Indianapolis, I think they're going to start being on a more even keel, you know, and move further and further away from that bad start.
I'd say that's especially at home against the Jaguars, and, you know, these teams know each other pretty well. Again, yeah, the Jaguars are – You feel like they're a little better. They're still 1-2, and they had a real rough time last week. But that was in New England, and that's what happens. If you're, you know, not a powerhouse coming in there, you're probably going to get rolled up. Indy getting their second win against their second division opponent that they've played, and it's at home. I think that all sets up for a win for Indy.
Next, we have ourselves the New York Giants at the Buffalo Bills. I'm just going to keep this short and sweet. I'm going to go with the Bills here. I like Tyrod Taylor. I love that front seven. I think that front seven is going to cause huge problems for Eli Manning on Sunday. And for those reasons, I am going with the Buffalo Bills.
This is in Buffalo?
This is in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Ralph Wilson Stadium.
This is another one where, everything says Buffalo, you know, Buffalo should, but the Giants have just looked, you know, kind of garbagey a lot, you know, so far this year. And Buffalo has had, you know, that one tough game against the Patriots, but they've looked really good in their other two games. And there's just, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of reasons why the Giants should go in there and give them any sort of trouble. But the Giants are the Giants, you know, the Giants are that sort of team that can just come out of nowhere and do something. I don't know.
I just don't see it this week in Buffalo.
I'm not saying I see it this week in Buffalo, though. So I'm going with Buffalo.
Carolina Panthers are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, one of the more, you know, struggling teams around the National Football League right now. You know, got a rookie quarterback in Jameis Winston. Needs some help in the secondary. Needs some help on offensive line. So I think, you know, Tampa's the home team here, but there's a lot to like about Carolina. Cam Newton is playing extraordinarily well, given all of the situations that he's had to face in terms of injured players. We've got no Jericho Cotchery again this week, you know, and what happened with Kelvin Benjamin and all of that. So I don't know. I mean, Tampa, they can't win at home. They can't win on the road. They're struggling. It's not very good. I think that Carolina can go in there and get this win.
Well, Tampa can win on the road.
They
did when they're in New Orleans. So
yeah, but that's a different. New Orleans is in a bad way.
New Orleans has their own issues for sure. And I don't. I'm not entirely sold on Carolina yet. I've seen them play. A Jaguars team that again I expected more out of, but you know it's still. They're still kind of the Jaguars trying to get over themselves and get past that. I've seen them play a Houston team that didn't have much of a quarterback situation, and that was at home. And They looked really good last week, though, Carolina did, and especially Cam. I could see the Bucks giving them. I could see the Bucks winning this game, honestly. I'm going to go with Carolina mainly because of how well Cam played last week, and I think he can keep that going. Although I wouldn't be surprised if he relaxed a little bit because he is going to Tampa and he knows that they're not that good. And Tampa,
I don't think he's
going
to relax that much. I mean, it's a divisional team he knows really well. That's a tough front seven, and he doesn't have a great O-line.
I'm not saying that you have to agree with me. I'm just saying that I could see that happening, and it wouldn't be too surprising to me. But I'll still pick Carolina.
Next, we have the Philadelphia Eagles at Washington. This game may get moved or changed or something, depending on what happens with Hurricane Joaquin. I don't know. Play through the hurricane. It's not going to be that bad. Depends on how bad it is, I guess. Speaking of how bad it is, I guess, nothing about Washington convinces me. I understand that, you know, they for week one, they had the best running attack and best defense in the NFL, but it is kind of fallen apart a little bit as the weeks have unfolded. And we all know what happened with Philadelphia opening 0-2 and finally getting that win last week against the New York Jets. It's hard for me to believe in either of these teams right now. So I am going to go with the home team, which is Washington. But if this game gets moved to a neutral site, I'm going to go with the Eagles. But for right now, as it stands, Washington reluctantly.
Yeah, I'll give some caveats on this one, too. I'll say if they move to a neutral site and the weather's not much of an issue, then I think Philly should win. I think if it stays at home and it's not, you know, terrible, or we'll say if it's bad enough weather to be bad weather but not bad enough weather to cancel the game, then I think it sets up well for Washington because they do have a pretty decent run attack and they do have a pretty strong run defense, and I think that would marginalize a lot of what Philly has as advantages.
Well, one thing to keep in mind, of course, is that FedEx Field is terrible. It's always in terrible condition, and now it could be waterlogged.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a slog and fun to watch, I'm sure.
They'll probably put RG3 out there just to see if he'll get hurt again. Oakland Raiders at the Chicago Bears. Chicago has not won a game yet. Oakland, one of the surprising 2-1 teams in the NFL. I think that Oakland went out to Cleveland last weekend and got the job done. And Cleveland, I think, is a better team than the Bears right now for all of their issues, because the Bears haven't won a game yet, and they keep losing in very spectacular fashion. At least the Browns in their losses have kept these games close. I'm going to go with the Oakland Raiders. I like so much of what they're doing right now versus what Chicago is struggling with and what they're trying to do. So I'm going to go Oakland.
I'm going to put a caveat on this one, too. I do like what Oakland's got going on. You know, we've seen some flashes from some of their young good players like Amari Cooper and Mack last week looked really good. But I'm going to say this one, I'm going to reserve my opinion till I see what happens at the quarterback position. I think if Cutler comes back, potentially I think that they could pull one out. They're the home team. They haven't looked completely dead at home. You know, they were able to do a few things here and there with Cutler. You know, again, it was the end of that Green Bay game where they really pulled away. And I don't think Oakland is quite strong enough to just come in and dominate them if they're, you know, motivated and ready to do their thing. But if Jimmy Clausen's in there, I think this is easily for
Oakland. It's probably going to be Jimmy Clausen. I wouldn't imagine that Cutler's going to be ready to go from that injury yet.
And honestly, if Cutler's, you know, even if they throw him in there just because they don't want Clausen and you know, he's like 50% Cutler, then, you know, that's might as well as be Jimmy Clausen, I guess. So if Cutler's relatively healthy, I'll take the Bears. But probably it's going to be Oakland because it's probably not going to be that case.
Houston Texans are at the Atlanta Falcons. We got to keep an eye on Falcons receiver Julio Jones. He's dealing with a hamstring and a toe injury and hasn't been practicing this week. Meanwhile, Arian Foster could return for the Houston Texans, probably on a limited basis, I would assume. I think even without Julio Jones, I think Atlanta can get this win. Houston's got problems at the quarterback position that aren't going to be solved by Arian Foster, you know, especially coming off of this groin surgery. He's not going to be playing all of the snaps. And even if he does, he's not going to get all of the carries because it's just not prudent at this point. And Atlanta's got a lot going on in the run game. I mean, they showed it last week, and the defense continues to improve. And they're at home in their dome where they're extraordinarily comfortable. So I'm going to go with the Falcons, even if Julio Jones can't go.
Yeah, I think even without Julio Jones, I think the Texans do have some weaknesses on their defense, and it's all in the back. And Matt Ryan could potentially. You said this is in Atlanta, right?
This is in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is just. It's going to be a bit tough, I think, for Houston to go in there and get this win. Like you said, the run games look pretty good. I think Atlanta's O line has looked pretty good through the first month. And I think this would be. This one's going to be a little tough for the Texans with or without Julio. I agree with you on that.
And the final early afternoon game for week four is the Kansas City Chiefs, who are at the Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati, of course, 3-0. And I think that they're going to go to be 4-0. I think that, you know, playing at home has been one of their strengths of the Andy Dalton era. You know, A.J. Green, healthy, banging. Marvin Jones, healthy, banging. Tyler Eifert, healthy, banging. Giovanni Bernard, doing great. Offensive line, one of the best in the league. Defense is so much better this year now that Geno Atkins is 100% healthy. You know, the Chiefs have assets. They have assets in Jamaal Charles. They have assets on defense. But I don't think it's enough considering what the Bengals bring to the table. The Bengals are at home. The Bengals are feeling really good. So Cincinnati all the way.
Yeah, I think it's a tough draw for the Chiefs, just based on, you know, who you know, they played Packers last week, all that. And, yeah, you know, it's early in the season. It's a day game. The Bengals are rolling. I don't have much of a reason to pick against them until they play a night game. I'm going to keep hammering on that. So
we got four games in the late afternoon this week, starting with the Cleveland Browns, who are at the San Diego Chargers. San Diego, you know, they got some stuff they need to work on, particularly on offensive line. Phillip Rivers been sacked out 10 times already this year. You know, Cleveland, if they can mess with Phillip Rivers, they have a chance. If they can run the ball, they have a chance. But when you look at what the Browns on defense are giving up, 155, 154, 166 rushing yards in a game, it looks like it could be a really nice week for that rookie out there in San Diego, one Melvin Gordon. And the Browns secondary taking a huge step backward this year. Joe Hayden and Dante Whitner in particular struggling in coverage. You know, there are ways that the Browns can go out to San Diego and put it together and get this win, but I don't think they can do all of those things at the same time. I'm going to go with the Chargers.
Yeah, I think this is a tough spot for the Browns. The Chargers, you know, they definitely have some deficiencies. Maybe the Browns can take advantage of those.
I don't know if they can take advantage of all of them.
Yeah,
though.
That's that and
while minimizing their own weaknesses
or
on defense,
or doing any of them enough
to
like overcome the rest. And yeah, I think this is I could see some points put up in this, and because you know the Chargers have shown ability to make some mistakes and that lead to points and things like that. And, you know, there could be the Chargers kind of getting in their own way for some of it. But, you know, they're coming home off a tough loss and facing a Browns team that has clearly a lot of issues right now, things that have regressed, if anything, from last year. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Chargers as well.
Green Bay Packers are at the San Francisco 49ers. You know, I guess San Francisco gets a little bit of help here just because they're the home team. But this is Green Bay, and at this point right now, Aaron Rodgers is the unstoppable quarterback of the National Football League. It doesn't matter what receivers of his get hurt, who leaves, who comes in. He finds a way to get guys open. He just makes throw after throw after throw after throw, and I don't think that San Diego is going to be able to put together any sort of defensive effort that's going to be able to stop that. You know, San Francisco might be able to get a few big gains on offense here, but it's not going to be enough to match the firepower of the Packers, so I'm going to go with Green Bay.
Yeah, this is going to be San Francisco's second home game and also their second home game against the NFC North. They played very well in that first one. I think this is probably a tougher draw for them.
A little bit.
Slightly. And they just look that's the thing is the devolution of the offense since from week one through week three for San Francisco is remarkable.
And they've been simplifying it every week for Colin Kaepernick. They've been making it more and more simple every week, and it just keeps getting more and more painful.
Really
to watch.
Telling was Arizona's comments after the game.
Yeah,
how they knew that it was all so simplified that it was easy for them.
Yeah, they didn't have to do anything special to stop it.
And potentially, the Niners can't. I don't know. This is Green Bay. Potentially the Niners can cover because I just imagine they're going to be getting a lot of points. So,
St. Louis Rams are at the Arizona Cardinals in a NFC West matchup.
Ooh,
you know, I love
one.
That St. Louis front seven. Love it, love it, love it, love it. You know, I think this game would be advantage St. Louis if this game was in St. Louis, but it's in Arizona. Carson Palmer is playing extraordinarily well. Larry Fitzgerald is playing really well. Arizona's offensive line is holding up better than anticipated. Defense is playing really, really high level. And I can't really say that St. Louis got all that much going on offense right now. You know, the Steelers' front seven is pretty good, but their secondary is awful, and yet St. Louis could only put up 6 points last week against it. So I'm going to go with Arizona Cardinals, particularly because Arizona's at home.
Arizona's rolling right now.
They sure are.
You know, this is it's not too surprising. You know, Carson Palmer, you know, knock on wood, has stayed healthy so far, and he's doing his thing. He looks like the veteran quarterback that he is, and he's able to make a lot of those throws that the backups couldn't last year. So they're playing really well. Like you said, the Rams have a lot of talent, but I think I'd give them a lot more of a chance and potentially even pick them if it was in St. Louis, but it would be even hard to do that, I think. So, yeah, I'm going with Arizona here.
And the final of the four late afternoon games on Sunday, the Minnesota Vikings travel to Denver, take on the Broncos in Mile High Stadium, or Sports Authority Field at Mile High Stadium, as it's now known.
It's presented by.
You know what? I'm going to pick the upset here, and I'm going to go with Minnesota over Denver. I'm saying this for a couple of reasons. One, I like Denver's got a good defense going, but I like Minnesota's a little bit more. Minnesota can run the ball. Denver really can't run the ball very well right now. And Denver is a stingy run defense, but you're talking about a running back, and you talk about Adrian Peterson, and they're two kind of different things to me at this point. I don't know. I'm feeling kind of good about this game. I just feel like Peyton is going to look a little flat. I don't know. I just have a hunch, and I'm going to go with my hunch because hunches are always to be honored. Minnesota.
Hey, I've made picks on hunches many times, and sometimes they work out, and sometimes
they
don't.
You've got to honor the hunch, though.
I don't know. I like Minnesota. I like a lot of what's going on. I like what Zimmer's doing up there. I don't know. This Denver defense is playing really well, though. I mean, really well. And you know, Peyton hasn't looked super Peyton until parts of the last game and parts of the week before that. Second half of the week before that. So, you know, it's not full on Peyton thing and what we've seen, but and I agree, their run game has struggled. But that defense is playing so well, and they're at home in their Mile High confines. I'm going to go with Denver here. Although I think
that's probably the smart choice.
It'll
be a fun game, and I'm glad that like we've got four games going, and like we can really enjoy some quad boxing.
Yeah, absolutely, quad boxing.
And then finally Sunday night. Well, not finally, but finally on Sunday. Sunday night, the Dallas Cowboys, without Tony Romo and without Dez Bryant, are at the New Orleans Saints, a team that may or may not be without Drew Brees. Brees is confident that he can play. So I'm going to go with the caveat that Drew Brees is playing here. If he's not, I mean, it's Brandon Whedon and Luke McCown. I don't even know what to say about that. I'm gonna say that Drew Brees plays and that the Saints win.
Yeah, that's about all you're given.
Yeah. I don't feel too great about it, but that's where I'm at.
I don't know. I'll give a little bit more reasoning behind that. Brees or not, you know, they're both playing backup quarterbacks. New Orleans is at home. They're definitely hungry for that first
Brees
win.
Brees or not, they're both playing backup quarterbacks. That doesn't make any sense. Brees is not a backup quarterback.
No, I'm sorry. Brees or not, the Cowboys have a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
And the most, you know, if he doesn't, then it's two backup quarterbacks. But it's, you know, New Orleans is at home. They're definitely hungry for that first win. They're searching for that first win. And I also, but the other side of it really is that that collapse in Dallas last week, I think that has them, questioning themselves as a team right now. And I think that that might bleed over into this week.
Brandon Wynn said they're going to give him space to swing it. He's going to swing that ball out there, so we'll see.
Yeah.
And we'll finally,
see if that's if they have space for him to swing it, and he swings it out there, it's hard to say how good that's going to be. So he did look good at times over the last week or 2 weeks or whatever, but we'll see.
And finally, Monday Night Football. We've got the Detroit Lions at the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle coming up with their first win at home last week. The first win of the season, which was at home last week, and now they are 1-2. I firmly believe they're going to be 2-2 after this because, A, they're at home, and B, you know, it's the Detroit Lions. And while the Detroit Lions can play well and not shoot themselves in the foot, it's going to be hard to do that, particularly against this Seahawks team that has a lot going on for it. You know, Marshawn Lynch might not be out there, but it might not even matter. So at this point, I can't do anything but pick Seattle in this situation. So Seahawks it is.
Seattle got a taste of that home cooking last week, and they, you know, did everything they needed to against a severely inferior opponent.
Yes.
I don't
severely inferior.
Even though they have the same record, I don't think the Lions are quite as bad as the Bears.
No.
The Lions definitely have a lot of talent on that team still, and they have, you know, mental issues that they need to deal with in order to turn that corner this year and actually start winning some games. So my answer as far as what I think is going to happen in this game is I think that the Lions will at times look spectacular and at times look terrible and get close enough just to make all the really optimistic Lion fans think that they're actually going to win the game and then they're going to lose it.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a cynical fan?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. Well, I'm trying not to I'm trying to make an accurate pick, but at the same time, sounding kind of like a cynical fan.
I cover the Browns, and I'll tell you right now, Lions fans might be stuck on cynicism. Browns fans moved on from cynicism like 10 years ago. They are just in like apocalypse mode.
Well, they're where the Lions fans were 7 years ago, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
The nadir.
Yes. So, yes. Now Lions fans are back to cynical. Oh, if Browns fans could just get back to cynical.
Well, they were kind of there last year, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or at least for part of the year. Anyway. So.
That.
Was.
Our.
Minute picks.
That was terrible.
Yeah, that was like a bad, like.
That was really bad.
Answering machine message.
I knew there's something about that that made my skin crawl.
At least we ad-libbed that, and that wasn't, like, planned out or anything.
No. Thankfully. But, yes, those were our week 4 minute picks. As always, burn them.
Roll them up. Oh, never mind.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to send it on home here at this week's F-Ball NFL podcast. By the way, it's National Podcasting Day, according to whoever brings that up, so. Yay!
How do they know that we record on
Wednesday?
We're
celebrating our holiday today.
Sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we'll be right back. That about does it for this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. As always, I'm your host. I'm Andrea Hengst. I cover the Cleveland Browns and Pittsburgh Steelers at BleacherReport.com, the Cleveland Browns and the rest of the AFC North here and there for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and the entire National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com and TheSportsDaily.com. You can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian, and according to Andrea, she's the host, so that I guess that means I'm the sub-host of this show.
Co-host!
Well, if I'm a co-host, then we're both co-hosts, right?
No, I'm the host.
So you're the host, and I'm the sub-host.
Yes, you're the sub-host.
The vice host. I'm the vice host of the F-Ball NFL podcast, as well as the producer of the NFL podcast, and sound producer of the NFL podcast.
F-Ball NFL podcast.
And, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, this is one quarter of the way through the 2015 NFL season. It goes by so fast. So enjoy every minute of this Sunday's action. And, of course, we will be back next Wednesday, as we always are, right here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.